just got called up to the big league, son. Welcome to the show. This is Primetime Sports with Bob McCowan on the Sportsnet Radio Network.
John, if my computer at home worked like this, I'd find a new company.
And?
Well, it doesn't. It works all right.
Oh.
The ones in here are just junk.
You mean they're not supposed to be black screens?
No.
Oh.
No, I don't think so.
Okay.
And then when you click on something, it's supposed to go to it.
It's starting up now, Bob.
All right. I'm going to see if I can get on. Like, you know, this is extremely frustrating. I've been here for 8 minutes. And I can't get this thing to do what I want it to do. And it's nothing unusual, just the normal stuff.
Well, there's the president of the department company.
Hi, yay, 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 yay. Trying to do a show with no computers.
Bob, what did you do for the first 35 years of your show?
I did a show with no computers.
Well, come on. Use your guile. Use your wit. Use your wisdom.
You're right. I'm leaning too much on it, aren't I?
You're into those Twitter feeds and all that stuff.
So, what do you make of this Phil Kessel thing defending his pal Dion Phaneuf and attacking those of us in this business?
Yeah. So, yeah. Seriously. Yeah. You know. Yeah. So, hey. Have they won more games? Are they winning? How's the power play going?
Well, we know they suck. We get that.
And you know what?
Is that what he's mad at?
I think he's mad at life. Yeah. Okay, I think he's mad at life.
Well,
at making $7 million a year and not getting the respect that other $7 million goal scorers get in other markets.
How many goals has he scored in the last 20 games?
I don't know. I don't have my stats in front of me. The computer's down.
How about one?
Okay. Well, no, I mean, and there's some validity to some of the criticism, but, you know, at the same time, you know, we have to have thicker skin too. You know, we are tough on this team. We are tough on the Toronto Maple Leafs.
I don't think that's true at all.
Oh, Bob, we are. But you know what? They deserve.
Wait a second.
They deserve it.
Of course they do. Well, then no, we're not. You're not tough on them if they're playing like crap, and that's what they've done for a decade. A decade of junk.
But in fairness to the present Maple Leaf team, just as it should be fair to the media, you know, well, you were here 10 years ago. Oh, and so was I. So, well, forget about the fairness part. I mean, they're not responsible as players for what happened in 1973. They're not responsible what happened in 1993, and they're not responsible in 2003.
Who is? Nobody.
Well, we talked about it.
Well, nobody's responsible.
Ownership.
Because, well, oh, but
ownership's responsible.
Well, all the owners haven't owned the team for 10 years.
But, I mean, there is some level of responsibility at every level. You know, and by God, Phil Kessel should be thankful that there's an angry fan base and angry media in this town, because that means people here care. They care about this team.
Well, we know that. So what?
Well, that's what it's all about today.
Nah.
Whining. Guy, you know, they're whining. Media's whining. You know, you're whining.
You're just being a baby. I mean, I don't know why.
I wish that there are things that you would say. I wish he'd stick up for Phaneuf on the ice a couple times when Eric Staal.
I'd like to see that.
Yeah.
Yeah. Where has that been?
You know, there, but
like, check somebody once in your life. You know.
Well, now, but that's not possible.
Well, no, it's not in his game.
So it's not in his game. So don't expect him to.
I don't have any expectation for him to do that. And I don't know whether I'm part of the media that he refers to. My guess is I'm not, so I don't take it personally.
Oh, I think you are.
You can think whatever you want. I'm telling you I'm not.
You're hard on the Leafs.
Well, yeah, because they're a crummy hockey team.
Okay. You're hard on Dion Phaneuf when he plays badly? That's what Kessel's point was today, that he's sick and tired of people picking on Dion Phaneuf, who you know, signed up to be this, you know, to be in this organization, and he's a better player than the media is portraying him to be.
Well,
you know, that's okay. That's good.
If he is,
stick up for your teammate. You know, I stick up for you.
What, you and me?
I stick up for you.
When does that happen?
Everywhere but here, okay? Everywhere but here. You know, when I'm on the street.
No, tell me more about it.
$700 club.
Tell me about it when you're at the $700 club.
Why does Bobcat wear those glasses? Stop it. Don't ask that question again.
Well, I'm not telling that story anymore.
No, I know.
I stopped telling that story years ago.
But I don't mind what Kessel did today. Gosh, you know?
Well, give us something to talk about. Other than how crappy they are. And that's all we've had to talk about.
It will be difficult for the next 19 games. I mean, let's face it, 19 games left in this arduous season for the Toronto Maple Leafs. 19.
Well, it's not relevant to me, really, but I know it's relevant to you because...
Well, it's relevant to the hockey fans in this town. It's relevant to the players. It's relevant to the people who are selling hot dogs and popcorn at the Air Canada Centre. It's relevant. Come on.
You're speaking for the people who sell popcorn and hot dogs? Yeah. Get a real job!
Like a radio announcer?
Yeah! Get a job in broadcasting.
And then become Then become part of the media.
Kind of future do you have part-time selling hot dogs and roast beef sandwiches at the Air Canada Centre?
$11, those roast beef sandwiches.
It's probably more than what those people make.
And they're really good.
They're only $11?
Well, the last time I bought one, it was $11.
What year was that?
19.
Did it start with, I was going to say, it started with a 19.
I don't know how much they are anymore.
I think they're more than that.
Really? Wow.
See if you can find out how much is a roast beef sandwich at the ACC. I bet you it's 14. I swear to God it was 13 and change the last time I bought one. I swear. I may be wrong. Maybe I'm wrong. Maybe that was with a tiny drink, like a 1 ounce taster.
Diet Coke.
And Phil Kessel, shut up and play hockey.
No, I know.
Leave the talking to us.
No, he's good. It's good that he talked. It's good.
Don't care.
You know?
I don't care one way or the other.
Showed some gumption. Showed something. Showed some cojones.
Well,
thank goodness.
Why
now?
Why now?
Well, first of all, the trade deadline's over.
Yeah.
And
with you.
Yeah. And secondly, he's in Florida.
Far away.
I don't know why now. I mean, these are things.
There was this stupid tweet on.
Well, that was embarrassing.
The other network.
It was embarrassing.
Well, yeah. Do you think that has something to do with it?
I have no idea.
Yeah.
I have no idea.
I don't want to talk about it. You know, I'll tell you what. You know, you live by the sword, you die by the sword. You know, all these young executives running around the broadcast industry who think that social media is somehow the be-all and the end-all, and how do we tap into it, and we've got to make sure we do this, we do that, blah, 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 blah. Well, there's what happens.
Yeah.
There's what happens when you just stick social media stuff up there and you don't take the time to scrutinize it.
Which, editorially, was a mistake.
It's an embarrassment for TSN. I'd fire the guy who was responsible for putting those things up. I mean, assuming you told him, now look, you better read every one before you put it up, and, you know, you better be sure it's worth putting up.
That would certainly be the intent of the system. There has to be some sort of filter. Heck, you go on newspaper websites, there's a filter before you could even post your own personal comments on an article.
Well, I wouldn't know anything about that. I mean, somebody's responsible for it, and somebody should get fired for it.
Yeah. It was disappointing and embarrassing.
Let's get the menu, but no prices at the Air Canada
Maybe
Center.
They're just fluctuating. Maybe they're like a...
Call them.
Maybe they're like a barrel of oil. Bob.
Call the Air Canada Center and say, we need to know the price of the roast beef sandwich. Do you think it's different in different places?
No. No, I don't.
So you think it's the same at the stand-up counter?
Yes.
As it is upstairs in some suite?
Oh, yes.
Oh, yes?
Yeah, oh, yes.
So it's the same price everywhere.
You wouldn't think of stiffing the rich people more, would you?
Sure.
I think it's the same
price. If you can, why not? I don't know. Well, I mean, no, look, if you go to the keg and buy a filet mignon, it costs this. If you go to...
No, but you don't...
Bruce Chris.
No, that's a different company. That doesn't count.
Well...
It's a different company.
It's a filet mignon.
Yeah.
It's $15 more. Why? Well, because it's a more upscale environment, I suppose.
It's not exactly the same piece of meat either, Bob. Not exactly the same piece of meat. And you know that as well as I do.
It's pretty good.
It is good.
Pretty close to the same.
Sure. What about the wedge salad? Is it any good?
Oh. John, dinner?
Yeah. Wedge salad, a little steak? Come on, Bob.
Oh. Doesn't get any better than that, does it?
It does not. Nope.
No.
No. Maybe we'll invite Phil Kessel.
We might. Oh, listen to this.
Welcome back. Your dreams
The name is familiar, but I'm kind of blanking here a little bit. Darren Rovell. No, that's not right. Ravel.
What's up?
ESPN. Well, where you been?
Well, when I went over to ESPN, there was some talk about, you know, you have to go to places where ESPN has ownership of station, and so we went somewhere else. But
oh, you went to the dark side.
I did.
But he came back.
A lot of complaints.
Well, we're thrilled to have you back. You know that.
This is the place where I got counseled on how to sing the Canadian national anthem. I mean, there's a lot of memories here.
Well, I know. And we kind of hung out together for about 5 minutes in Vancouver.
We did.
Yeah. So there's a long and not so storied history to our relationship. How you been? Okay. Otherwise?
Yeah, the last 2 years, you know. Good. Everything's great. 3 kids under 3 and just trying to survive.
I mean, are you done with this breeding thing? Or are you?
Yeah, I'm done. My house looks like a fertility accident.
Oh, my God. 3 under 3. Wow.
Yeah.
Were you in a hurry or something?
No. Well, wife was. I wasn't necessarily.
It is an interesting phenomenon that women go through the extraordinary, it's a process of being pregnant and then are prepared to do it again.
I don't want to say it's like anything, but if there's something like it that I've gone through, it's like, you know, you write a book and, it's not that painful, but you say you'll never do it again. You see the shiny cover, and you say, all right, let's do this again.
I guess that must be what it's like, huh?
I am staying completely out of this.
Exactly
one.
Like that.
I am...
See, five, 6 years ago, I wrote a book. I took a look at the shiny cover, and I said, this is the last time I'm looking at a shiny cover with my name on it. I am not going through this process
again. How
many
kids did you have, though?
Well, I... Some.
You were...
Few. Yeah, well, that's another story altogether. All right, so what do you want to talk about? This is your first day back. We're thrilled to have you back here. We hope you'll be back more than just this one time.
Of course.
And so I thought, you know, rather than start out with a topic, I'd say, what do you want to talk about? What are you tweeting about these days?
Well, obviously, first day of baseball games. I don't know what you guys think about the future of baseball, but I think Rob Manfred, like Adam Silver, is very open and different. You had some criticism of Bud Selig of the game, and he's like, that's not necessarily true, even though it was.
Yeah.
And I think that hurt the game. And I think the same thing with David Stern. I mean, would not take criticism openly, and I think that's good. And I do think the biggest risk that baseball is facing is not being talked about at all.
Right.
And that's not the aging population or the time of games. It's the decoupling, the segmentation of cable and young kids, even who like baseball, saying, all right, I'll watch on my Watch ESPN app or something else. I don't necessarily need cable.
Right.
And you have all these RSNs, all these regional sports networks, and all these teams lauding how they have, you know, $80 to $100 million deals and $1.5 billion over 30 years. And, you know, once you hear that the Arizona Diamondbacks have a $1.4 billion local cable TV deal, you know that that's a bubble. I mean, that just smells bubble. And so, as I'm not saying it's going to go all a la carte where you choose this and choose that, and but there's going to be some kind of you can choose fewer channels, and that is going to expose this model of local TV that has been so big and has been so responsible for boosting the payrolls of the smaller market teams.
So what's the future in your mind? You don't sound very optimistic about the future of baseball on TV.
It's going to be different. The future is not going to be completely the carriers sticking you with the fee, even though your grandma and have never watched a Royals game.
Right.
I mean, the Rangers this year are going to be making about $115 million on their local TV deal. And if it was a la carte alone, so if only the people who watched paid for it, they'd be paying about $11,000 a season.
Per person?
Yes.
Oh, my God.
If you took the rights fee and you said, we must pass this rights fee onto the I think the Rangers have 63,000 people on average who watch their games.
Wow.
And they're making $115 million off the rights fee.
Wow.
So I don't think it's Armageddon, but I also think no one's talking about it.
We understand that in the television business, you know, and it's not just the thousand-channel universe that we have arrived at, where the U.S. networks no longer can dominate the playing field. There are too many options. We have a million things going on. But one of the things we know that's going on is people can PVR things. People can tape things, watch when they want to watch. There are channels. The cable companies and satellite providers will give you channels that will let you do it. Or you can buy a service that will allow you to do it. And one of the last bastions of live television is presumed to be live sports. Why isn't baseball, or is baseball, the least likely of those to profit by that?
Well, baseball's profited plenty by the fact that they've been able to, at least to this point, sell the Time Warners of the world and the Cablevisions and all the carriers, the fact that you have as much of this live content that people don't PVR, DVR, TiVo, whatever you want to call it. They don't do it. You can try to get around it, but that's why TV deals go to 2030 and 2040, because there's still a sense that no matter how we watch it, we will watch it live. But baseball, you get the sense that baseball is not benefiting at it as much because of the large volume of games.
Yeah, I suppose. Yeah.
Still, it's hard to compare it to the NFL. It's not apples and oranges. Still, at least from the TV standpoint, even if you're having 65,000 or 85,000 people watching a game, 85,000 people in a given night will win the night in at least 10 markets in Major League Baseball.
That's
worth it.
Where do you think we're talking a great deal about the regionalization of baseball, because in many ways that's where the money's come from. Where is there any chance that baseball has a national footprint again, Daryl?
No, I mean, it's just different. I think that the NFL has kind of, when you're comparing anything to the NFL, and everyone does, I think the NFL has really been the sport where not only do you watch your team, you care about the whole league and everything else involved. And I think because fantasy has kind of leapt ahead with the NFL, I think that's kind of made that bond even stronger. For the most part, you don't watch a general Major League Baseball game. It's just the volume of games. You can't possibly do it. And you're even considered crazy in today's day and age if you consider watching all your own team's games. So I don't. I think it's a natural thing to compare it to the NFL, but I don't think the league fan, so to speak, exists as it does with the NFL
or the NBA.
Again, it's just the number of games. And when I talked to Rob Manfred a week and a half ago, I said he knows that I've wanted to cut the baseball season to 110. I've said it way too many times. Mm-hmm. And he entertained 154 because there's a natural place because record there
historically
are
historically
there's 1960 yeah, before
yep.
1961 and 62.
Yep.
But nothing less than that. It's going to be hard to compare a Major League Baseball with anything else.
I want to move along, but I'm interested in the 154 thing. Do you think would he like to see that happen, in your opinion?
He didn't say he'd like to see it happen. I think he just said, I'm open to a dialogue. And
right.
He also said, there's not any issue. It's not top of mind right now. But he's open to a dialogue, which, by the way, although, you know, some people would say, what's the big deal? It's 8 games. I mean, Bud Selig would have never said that.
No, he wouldn't. No, he wouldn't have addressed it.
Right.
No.
And length of games would probably be Manfred's biggest issue?
Yes, length of games is first, and then trying to get that average age down, which, by the way, I mean, the daily fantasy phenomenon, I don't know if it's going the same way in Canada. I mean, there were more restrictions to begin with here from a betting standpoint, and this is closer as close to legal betting as we've ever had in this country. But daily fantasy, the numbers associated with daily fantasy, is absurd. You know, the two daily fantasy websites, DraftKings and FanDuel, took in $925 million in entry fees in 2014.
Wow.
But it's not gambling.
Well, okay, so here in the U.S., there was a law in 2006, the Unlawful Internet Gambling Enforcement Act, which basically said that fantasy sports are games of skill, not gambling. Now, of course, they didn't have daily fantasy in mind at the time, but the daily fantasy people say daily fantasy is more a game of skill than year-long season fantasy because there's going to be injuries over the course of a year. On a daily basis, it's harder to win over time. Who knows? But they've carved that out, and that's kind of created this loophole that's going completely nuts. And so why did I mention that? Well, because the numbers show that the average daily fantasy participant is 25 years old, where the average season-long fantasy participant is 35 years old. So Manfred, obviously in the best interest of, hey, longest season, people get tired, daily fantasy on the rise, season-long fantasy for baseball on the decline, at least for young people who want to win now and get that money right away. Obviously, he's a proponent of daily fantasy.
So here's what I'd be interested in, because I'm not, I mean, I don't know about you, but I've never played at one of these fantasy games. I
did in the early 90s.
Did you?
Yeah.
Are these baseball fans, in the case of baseball fantasies, do they go to games? Do they follow teams? Do they watch on television? Do they listen on radio?
Baseball,
or are they different?
I would say baseball fans, because the season is so long, I do think that they're probably a little more rabid. I think it's harder to win a baseball fan. You can't, because of lineup changes every day, and you have to be a big, big fan of the game to be in baseball fantasy. Football fantasy, you're just delving in once a week. You could actually win a league football and not be a football fan. You could possibly win a league. You can't do that with baseball. But there is something to be said for, and this drives me nuts with football. Hey, you know, I'm a Jets fan, but I'm rooting for Tom Brady tonight. I mean, it's just like, that's something that I would never be able to do.
It's hard to understand, isn't it?
Yeah. And then also, you know, root for my money, you know?
Yeah. A couple, real quickly, Michael Jordan, now estimated to be...
Let's talk about Mayweather-Pacquiao instead.
Oh, you want to do with it? Okay.
Yeah.
Are you going? Are you planning on going?
I am going.
Oh, good.
I'm going to cover like behind the scenes of every. I'm going to follow the money.
Yep.
There's three hotels that are sold out already. MGM is close, which, by the way, people are like, how is MGM not sold out? Second largest hotel in the world.
7,000 rooms, yeah. $2,500 a ticket.
Exactly.
A room.
Yeah. So,
yep.
So the rooms are going crazy. It's going to be insane. And Vegas will be nuts. You have that same day, you have the NBA draft, Kentucky Derby, and the fight. So, and I do think ringside seats will be selling for $100,000 each.
And then
boxing will die again.
Well, I called it the last. This is the last great fight.
Yeah.
If you know who the next guy is, please tell me, because I have no clue.
No idea, and won't pretend to know.
Nope.
No idea.
No clue. This is it.
And what's the pay-per-view number?
$99.95.
Oh, okay.
That's exactly what I thought it was going to be.
That's my guess.
Okay.
Yeah.
Now they won't do it until they figure out, you know, everything with all the carriers and stuff like that, and that'll come down soon. The greater number for me is, what does it cost a bar to show it? Because, like, for example, when your bar shows NFL games, they're usually paying $3,500,
yes,
$5,000, $10,000. I know that huge chains, at least in the U.S., have not shown the last couple Mayweather fights because of what that cost was per TV or per capacity to show it.
Mm-hmm.
So the question will be, I mean, that's another question. How big is this fight, and how much are they going to push those limits, those boundaries, to get something, you know, a huge number, and will those bars turn it away?
So historically, if I have a bar and the capacity is 100.
I think you're paying for who could possibly show up to the fire code. There are ranges. There are ranges, and that's how you pay DirecTV or Showtime or whoever you're paying the satellite, you know, costs for.
Right.
But a lot of people don't realize. I mean, there are tough decisions that have to be made sometimes on these, and this will be a tough one.
So are you saying theoretically, if my bar seats 100 people or holds 100 people, I got to pay $99.95 per person?
No. There are ranges. You're not going to be paying retail like $100 a person. No, it's not straight up one to one.
Oh, okay.
What I pay at home is the bar, but there are ranges.
Yeah, commercial and commercial establishments. And
I understand.
And it is based on capacity.
Yes.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Well,
a lot of exciting things going on. So
it's our plan that we'll be in Vegas for the fight, and if we are, we'll let you know, and then you and I will be able to hook up again. But absent
the word hook up, Bob.
Yeah, whatever. Absent.
It is Vegas, you know.
If you're going to hook up anywhere, babe.
So if it happens there, it'll stay there.
It will stay right there. There'll be no further conversation about it.
I got three children.
Oh. Yeah, you've had enough of that. We got to get out of here. We're out of time. It's great to have
great
you back.
To be back.
Thanks, pal. We'll talk to you soon.
All right.
There's Darren Revelle of ESPN. Hated what he was doing. Begged to get back. And we finally said, oh, for God's sakes, all right. All right.
It's good of you.
Dougie Gilmore is going to join us next.
Really?
The managing general of the Kingston Frontenac.
Your old business partner.
Well, yeah.
Okay.
That's not what we're going to talk about.
No.
We're going to talk about the Kessel stuff?
Yes. We're going to ask, you know.
I thought you didn't think this. You don't think this is a story. You don't think this is worthy of conversation.
Well, then we'll talk about the Kingston Frontenac. You know?
I don't know anything about the Kingston Frontenac.
Well, that's my job. Sam Bennett, Lawson Krause. There's some pretty good young players on that team. Lawson Krause could be in the top five of the draft. You know, we talk about McDavid.
Lawson now, where Krause, are they in the standings?
They're going to make. They're tight to make the playoffs in the Eastern Conference.
But didn't they get off to a great start this year?
No. No, they.
Oh, they didn't?
No, they.
Last year?
New coach this year, Paul McFarland.
Oh, okay.
So they. But the good news is that Dougie re-upped to stay there. That was the bigger issue. Where was Doug going to be? And Doug's re-upped and staying there, and he's rebuilding a pretty good organization.
All right. The former captain of the Toronto Maple Leafs.
And the media pressure of being in Toronto.
Are you planning on interrupting me again?
Yep.
It's primetime on the Sportsnet radio and television networks.
It's the only time you have control of Bob McCowan. Let's go. Subscribe to Primetime Sports Podcast at iTunes or with your favorite podcatcher. Sportsnet 590 The Fan, on demand.
Two before the hour. McCowan here. Shannon over there.
And have we figured out the price of that roast beef sandwich yet?
No, it's anywhere from $15 to $18.50, I think.
Okay. Would you pay for it? Would you pay that?
Well, it's not $11.
It's really good, though.
I know. I had it once.
Wow.
And I think it was $13.75 or something when I had it.
Okay.
And it was really good.
I might have one Saturday.
But it wasn't. It's not. There's no such roast beef sandwich worth that much money.
I might have it. I might have one Saturday just to figure out whether it is worth it.
Just to find out what it costs.
Yeah. When I. Yeah.
Did they have that roast beef sandwich when Dougie played for the team? No.
Doug
played at Maple Leaf Gardens.
Doug actually, when he got reacquired by the Maple Leafs, got hurt in Calgary.
Oh, yeah, that's right.
And missed his home game opportunity here at the Air Canada Centre, I believe.
Do you think it was deliberate?
Well, I don't think the check was deliberate in Calgary.
Do you think he was really hurt?
Let's ask him. Didn't look very nice. That's all I know.
Here's the managing general of the Kingston Frontenacs, the former captain of the Toronto Maple Leafs. Here's Doug Gilmore. You weren't really hurt, were you?
No, Bobcat, not at all. You know, I'm playing these charity games on certain days, and wow, I'm going about a good 2 miles an hour out there. it's a lot of fun.
So, pretty much the same speed was when you were playing with the Leafs. Good. So, we're having this debate about the roast beef sandwich at the Air Canada Centre.
I've never had it.
You never had it?
Oh, okay. Never had it, no.
Shannon thinks it's like the best sandwich in the world, but it's like $17 or something.
Wow.
$17 for a sandwich, Gilmore.
There's a place up here, it's about $8. It's called the Hoagie House. And it's a cheesesteak hoagie, and it's phenomenal.
Oh, really? Okay.
Is that in Kingston?
Yep, just off the division.
Oh, I'll have to go.
Yes.
I go to Kingston once in a while.
Well, we know where it is, yes. Everybody goes to Kingston once in a while.
You do? You haven't been to Kingston in a long time.
Well, no, when we drive to Montreal,
we
pull into Kingston and I wave at Dougie.
Oh,
yeah.
Dougie doesn't know, but
I'm a little north of Sydenham Road, so just stop in anytime.
I have no idea what you're talking about.
You're on the lake, though, aren't you on the lake, Dougie?
Yeah, I'm on a place called Loughborough Lake. My parents moved out there when I was about 13, and then I bought in 97 after leaving the Leafs. And didn't know I was going to be back here 7 years ago full time, so, but it's been a great run.
Now, do you get back to Toronto much?
I do. I still have a lot of friends in the Leaside area, and I also have a place in Burlington. So it's kind of, thank goodness for the 407.
yeah, no kidding,
Gets me back there every once in a while. So it's an exciting time. We're getting closer to the playoff, guys, and even better than that, my daughter gets home tomorrow, and I get to see my granddaughter that I haven't seen in the 7 months, 8 months.
Hold on. I just feel old again.
Doug Gilmore's grandchildren.
A grandfather. I mean,
yeah, of course he is.
Holy smokes.
Yeah, little elf. So March 24th, their birthday, and they left in August, and they're back Thursday night. So exciting times.
Well, you are older than me, Doug, so that's okay.
There's nothing.
Hey, John, you know what? I do miss you. We're in Calgary on the same street. When you came over to shovel my driveway all the time, I just loved you for that.
Yeah. Yes, Mr. Gilmore, whatever you say, Mr. I know we're on a tangent here. The worst day of the year in my neighborhood in Calgary was Halloween because they used to bust the kids in.
Yes.
To Gary Roberts' house and to Doug Gilmore's house. And then so what
they
would
put them on a bus?
Oh, I guarantee it because what used to happen was you did trick or treat, you open the door and say, "Does Doug Gilmore live here?" No. That was it. We had to carry candy because Gilmore lived down the street.
Bob, we had a great neighborhood there, and it was a great area for us. And we had another friend, his name was Brian Carlin. And we have to get into this story real quick. Christmas Eve every year, he had a fire pit in the backyard. We'd go over there. And I got Gary involved on this one. But when they weren't paying attention, we went into the pantry and took all the labels off all the cans. And Debbie Carlin, the next day, was trying to figure out which was a gravy, which was peas.
Oh, that's good. That's good.
Well, you're basically screwed, aren't you?
Yeah, exactly.
You can't do anything about it.
Oh, we were laughing.
Yeah, oh, no. My God, that's funny
as
hell.
What are neighbors for?
Oh, I got to remember that one. I got a few people I don't like that much.
Okay, so
it's the best.
All right, now Bob doesn't want to ask it because he doesn't think it's a big story.
What?
Yes.
Phil Kessel goes off this morning blaming the media and defending his pal Dion Phaneuf, which is probably a good thing for a teammate. How tough is it to play in this market, and are you supposed to take all the criticism from the media day in and day out?
Well, I guess the biggest thing is, guys, the approach of it. Your team is your team, and yes, you got to stick up for each other, but you also, that means you got to play for each other. And you know, you got to give effort each and every night, and there's going to be good days and there's going to be bad days. And again, I think the biggest thing is that there's always going to be pressure. Doesn't matter where you are, through your peers, the fans, and the media. And the only way to get around it, you've got to absorb that and look it right in the eyes kind of thing and say, okay, let's go. And again, nobody's really going to do it on their own, but when you have the six guys on the ice that you're playing with each and every shift, you're going to make sure that they're accountable. And that's the only way you can look at it. And again, if you go out and you smile and you have fun, but that means work, guys. Each and every shift, you got to have the work ethic. And you just can't, in my eyes, you can't float around.
But you embraced it more when... I mean, you and I were together. We were around each other at the time you were the captain of the Toronto Maple Leafs. And I got a chance to see it. We had the restaurant together. Yeah. And you worked at it. It was in you, It was in you to be the captain and to understand what it takes. And it wasn't, I don't think it's in Dion. I don't think there's anything wrong with that. I just don't think it's in him. I don't think it's his personality. What are your thoughts on that?
Well, I think that goes hand in hand with everybody on your team. You look at how your team is built, and I can go to many different teams, but it's something that you've got older guys and you got younger guys, and everybody has to have some kind of leadership role. And whether it's Dion in the dress, I'm not there, so I can't speak on his behalf.
I understand.
He just has to go out and play his game and worry about what he's got to do each and every night. And the other guys, I think the biggest thing is when you get explained and you're at a certain level, a guy like Pat Burns, when he came in, we went out for a couple sodas, and all I can say is he said to me, you better be the best player in practice. You better be the best player in games. And that's what I expect from you. And that's the demanding side that a coach wants from his certain players. And he's not the only one that said that to me. He said that to Wendell. He said that,
he went around the room.
Oh, exactly. And we had the leadership from whether it's Foligno or McCown or Bob Rouse or, it goes on. And it's, everybody's got to be accountable. And that's the biggest thing. And again, I've only been to a couple of games this year. I do watch some games on TV. I've got my own issues up here in Kingston with injuries all year.
Yeah.
And it's something that I look at and say, well, why? Like the little things that have happened where they didn't salute the fans. It's like, guys, stop. Embrace it. Everybody get together. And each and every shift, somebody in that room has to make the other person accountable if they're not playing.
Does your attitude change? I mean, you won when you played here until the last little while. Does it change? Does your attitude change what you have to do and what you don't do when you're winning versus when you're losing?
Well, I think there's so many different ways to look at it, John. It's something that I'll never forget when we were winning. we had practices that were an hour and a half sometimes. When we were losing, we had 20-minute practices because Pat just felt that we some of the games that we won that we didn't deserve to win. And then some of the other games, when you're going through a losing streak, whether it's 3 games, 4 games, 5 games, whatever, that's when the practices are shorter and you bring your team together. And, you know, you have your team functions where you get together. And again, I'm not there. I don't know, but it's got to be a family. And it just seems like, well, Phil finally said something, so good for him. But he better also be the best player on the ice tonight.
Yeah. You've raised Pat Byrne's name a couple times. This is a hard question, I'm sure. And I don't know whether you even want to answer it, but I'm going to ask it anyway. Was he your favorite coach?
Yeah.
He was,
yeah.
Huh?
There's so many coaches that I had with the different teams, but by far the relationship that we had during the season, it was pretty quiet. Because if I didn't play well, he just gave me that police officer mentality stare down.
Yeah.
And I would be shaken. And I'd look at him, go, yeah, I know, I'll be better. And that was it. And he always when it was away from the rink, and again, when I first met him, and we went out, he said, well, come on downtown, and we're going to go for a beer, and we're going to talk about the year coming up. And I'm not really going to say what establishment he took me to, but it was not far off of Jarvis and Dundas.
Uh-oh.
And we were there for about an hour and a half until we got recognized and we got out of there. So, but that's the type of guy he was. And he had a relationship with a lot of guys. And where, again, he was demanding, but he was also a friend.
Yeah, indeed.
You get him in the summertime on the back of a motorcycle, mm-hmm. and you really got to know him all of a sudden.
No, exactly.
Hey, I know we...
Quick, we got about a minute and a half.
A minute. Sam Bennett, how's he playing? Our show is seen in Calgary on Sportsnet. How's Bennett since he's returned to your lineup?
You know what? He's come in with such a great attitude. All the kid does, he wants to play, whether it was going to be in Calgary or whether it's going to be with us. His first game, he was flying out there. His timing's off,
yeah.
And that's natural. But he's just a competitor. Like, he just wants to win. He wants to play hard. And I can't wait to see him in a couple more weeks. Mm-hmm. And meaning when everything gets going. Like, we play Wednesday, Friday, Sunday this week all at home, which is great. And it'll give him an opportunity to, you know, for our fans to see him again. And much needed wins coming up, and then get ready for our playoff run.
I'm not sure I'd want to play the Kingston Frontenacs in the first round.
Oh, not with Bennett back, no.
It's been.
You got to get there, but
you're following, and again, we got most of our games now are against divisional teams, so it's up to us to put ourselves in a good position. And again, I'm looking forward to and Merry Christmas having Sammy Bennett back.
No kidding. listen, it's always great to catch up with you. We don't see enough of each other, but next time you're in town, hopefully you'll stop by and we'll have a nice
chat.
I'd
love to anytime.
Okay, pal. All the best to you.
Take care.
Talk to you. There's Doug Gilmore, the general manager of the Kingston Frontenacs.
We did have some fun in Calgary, I must tell you.
That's one of the great things I've ever heard. Yeah. I guess you have to think about it for a second. It's like, now what do you do?
Yeah.
Now you have a closet full of cans with no labels on them.
Yeah.
And you have no idea what's in them.
No, I'm also thinking about how many... the meeting with Burns at Jarvis and Dundas, no cell phones, I think. No camera phones.
That was a peeler palace.
No, but I'm just thinking. Imagine if...
Oh, back in the day?
Well...
Oh, my God,
imagine
yeah.
if Peter Horacek and Phil Kessel went
you gotta hide.
Going,
you got to hide better than that.
Yeah, that's right.
Thank you, Shannon. You back tomorrow?
I haven't decided.
John and Shannon may or may not be with us again tomorrow. We'll try and alert you as soon as possible so you can adjust your listening or viewing requirements. If he's here, you may want to go somewhere else. Stephen Brunt is next. Primetime continues in a couple minutes.